We'll get started in about 30 seconds. I'm going to just start the recording. Okay, almost ready to start. Today is January 17th, 2013. This is a community conference call hosted by the Law Office of Rajiv Escana, PC, immigration.com. I am Rajiv. This call is being recorded. Please be mindful. Anything you say will be made publicly available. So if you want to conceal your identity, please feel free to do so. By participating in this call, you do not form an attorney-client relationship with us, nor we with you. This is merely for information purposes. That said, let me get started. As usual, I will first answer the questions that have been posted, then I will answer any follow-up questions, and after that, we will have, if time permits, questions from everybody about anything at all. First question is from Oso. The problem with Oso is that they do not have any grounds for getting an extension of an H-1 beyond 6 years because the labor certification that formed the basis of an earlier extension, which also appears to have been given in error anyway, that labor cert has expired. I-140 was never filed. So what the attorney has done is for the eighth-year H-1B extension, there is an RFE. They have planned to respond near the deadline for the RFE response. And then what they want to do is, in the meantime, they're starting the green card process. I personally find a bunch of things wrong with this personally, but that's me. I think that using law in a way that is clearly not allowed under the current rules could be deemed objectionable by an ethics inquiry. So I'm not quite sure this is the way I would have handled it. Of course, there are no easy answers here. This is a very difficult situation. Question is, how do I get my extension when there is no basis for an extension? And the answer is, you really cannot. Okay. Of course, you can, as your lawyer has planned, they want to file. It's not really a habeas corpus. I think you said there's a habeas corpus. It's probably a mandamus. They'll be filing a writ of mandamus, and they are saying that the grounds would be that the CIS memoranda have really no legal weight, and that there is no grounds for expiring a labor certification for this purpose. Again, I don't think you're going to win this case. I doubt that very much, but you never know. Going before the government, it's very difficult to say how it will be eventually handled. Is this really a violation of the APA? It's very difficult for me to predict. I think it's a long shot. Okay. So the question is there anything we can do? How about the 240-day rule? You see, like I told you, I find this whole situation quite objectionable because for a lawyer to file an extension fully knowing there is no ground for an extension. I mean, of course, as lawyers, we argue for extension of law. We argue for new interpretations of the law. But there are situations in which it's quite clear that we don't have a choice. In those cases, to file a petition without any basis, I don't know how I feel about that. But of course, if they are also going to file a lawsuit, that makes their ethical position much stronger because then they're really arguing for overturning a policy which is incorrect if the court agrees with them. So the 240-day rule, I don't know if I would say that that's a good way to go. Is it potentially possible? Probably, especially if you're filing a lawsuit. I don't think you have a lot of options. Okay. Your wife is on F1. Can you go from F1 to F2 and back to H1B? Sure, there's no problem at all. That's perfectly legal. changing from H-1B to F-2 and vice versa does not impact your labor certification process. As long as the employer has sufficient ability to pay your wages, they are making reasonably good money. The fact that you went from H-1 to F-2 then back to H-1, it's absolutely no problem. So really, I don't have any useful suggestions for you. It appears to me that whatever can be done is being done by your lawyers. I don't have very high hopes for winning the lawsuit, but I don't see any other options either. Okay? Next question is from Evan Sen 2000. They had their citizenship interview a couple of days ago. Everything was going fine. Everything was passed. The swearing-in was to take place at 2 p.m., but then a DUI case came up. Okay? So the question is, what could have gone wrong? Well, if the case was dropped, if the charges were dropped, again, remember, in immigration law, a conviction can be counterintuitive. Normally, you think of conviction as somewhere or a procedure under which you've been adjudicated guilty, but sometimes, even though you're not adjudicated guilty, it could be conviction under immigration law. However, does that disqualify you from citizenship? Not necessarily. At this point, all I can tell you is wait and watch and see how it plays out, okay? Dharma09 wants to know, is it possible to obtain an OPT after 10-month school in photography ending June? And the answer is, as far as I know, M1 students are allowed OPT to a maximum of 6 months. The way it works is, if you are in school for 1 month, you get 1 month of OPT. If you're in school for 3 months, you get 3 months of OPT. But the maximum is 6 months. Okay? What is the process? You talk to your school. You talk to your school. They will be able to guide you on how to file for your OPT for the M1. Is an H-1 visa in this field possible? If I remember correctly, again, I haven't looked at this particular area of the law for a while. As long as the M1 training is not being used to qualify for H-1, you can go for H-1. Okay? Join 412, RFE on H-1B transfer. Changed my job from employer A to employer B. There are two vendors, vendor B, who sponsored H-1B. Then there's a vendor C, and then client X. Employer B has filed for H-1B extension, and you are already working with end client X. H-1B is sitting around for 4 months. Now you got an RFE in late December about employer-employee relationship. In the meantime, X has also started H-1B transfer in Jan 2013. So in the worst-case scenario, if employer B gets denied, will it affect my status? The answer is yes. If the way it works is, if there are two petitions filed, petition 1 and petition 2, if petition 2 is filed while petition 1 is pending and your original status has expired, then you have a problem if petition 1 is denied, because your status has already expired and you were deriving your status from the pendency of petition 1. Okay? So original status, petition 1, petition 2. If original status has expired by the time you filed petition 2 and petition 1 gets denied, you've got a problem. If both petitions are filed during your status, original status, petition 1 gets denied, there should not be a problem, usually. Okay? I don't think you have many options at this point of time. You can talk to your lawyers. But if petition number 2 was filed after the expiration of your original status, there is not much we can do. You will get your H-1B if you get it approved. You'll just have to go for a visa stamping before you can start working. Vista_ wants to know, is H-1B visa stamping required for new H-1B transfer? So the question is, I've got my H-1B visa stamping for an employer. I'm still outside USA. Now another employer is getting an H-1B for me. Do I have to go for stamping again? The answer is yes. This is what the consulates tell us. Consulates say if you're already in USA and you change employers, you can travel on the same visa. But if you're outside USA and before entering USA you change employers, we want you to come back and apply for a visa again. Okay. Now, can you travel to USA and work for A with existing valid H-1 visa from B? The answer is no. I just gave you the answer to that question. That's not what the consulate wants you to do. Next question is from KML about priority date movement. I cannot predict that. Nobody can really predict, other than the State Department itself, what the priority date movement is going to be. So I really cannot comment on this. Vasudha wants to know, my daughter is a U.S. citizen. She applied for their green card, got fingerprinting done. They live in Kentucky. Husband is on H-1 and works there. Two questions. We have not submitted I-131. Can we leave country while the processing is going on? If it was an employment-based 485, I would have said yes. I don't know if the same rules apply to family-based. So I would say you should get your advanced parole before you travel. How long do we have to wait for green card? Typically, this process is less than 12 months. Typically. Okay. Savage J30 wants to know, my brother is currently on disability. He married a Brazilian woman. Now, they want him, Savage J30, to file I-864, the affidavit of support. Isn't that a big responsibility? And the answer is yes. It's a big responsibility. You are responsible for several years. You can read the instructions on I-864. They tell you exactly what, how long you're going to be liable. And the biggest problem is if she ends up getting some kinds of mean-tested benefits from the government can sue you for the amount of money they have paid out. Okay? So, yes, it can be quite dangerous. Chadwick wants to know, I joined Company A and went for stamping of my visa, which is good till 2015. Now I'm thinking of going back to my previous employer. They did not revoke my old H-1. Can I go back? Well, this is a very difficult question to answer. If you had asked me this question 4 or 5 years ago, I would have said you can go back. But for the past several years, the government's position has been that if an employee leaves, an H-1 employee leaves employment, the employer must revoke their H-1. They must. Or they must pay their full salary. So really, it's difficult for me to give you a good answer. I think the safest thing to do is to have the old employer apply for an H-1 again. Am I confident that I'm correct in my opinion? No, I'm not. Because there really is very little law on this issue currently. So another lawyer could advise you, go ahead and join the old employer. They've never revoked your H-1. I think they would be probably right as well. So it's very difficult for me to give you a definitive answer simply because there isn't one to the best of my knowledge. Okay. Next question, Ehsan wants to know, do I need a passport for my immigration interview? And the answer is you should get your passport renewed, yes. Okay. R.B. Hussey wants to know, H-4 to H-1B change of status. I would like you to know that any time you are on H-4 is not counted towards your H-1. So from December 2006 to September 2007, and then from January 2010 to now, you were on H-4. That period does not count. Okay? So you will have all the time on your H-1 minus October 2007 through Jan 2010, which is less than 3 years. So you probably have 3+ years of H1 left. Hari Ramachandran forgot to attach their existing reentry permit when they applied for another reentry permit. Well, I think this case can be sent back by the government as improper filing. Okay. You should contact the USCIS customer service. The way it works is, if the form's instructions require certain evidence to be attached with the form and you don't attach it, government usually does send the papers back as improper filing because they consider that material to be non-discretionary. You've got to attach that. So contact customer service, see what they say. IT analyst wants to know about changing employers using AC21 while AP EAD renewal is pending. One doesn't have anything to do with the other. Because when you apply for AP EAD renewal, you don't have to apply through an employer. You are applying based upon your own status for yourself. You might be using their lawyers, but it's not really connected to the employer. So question number one, should I file EAD AP renewal through existing employer? Doesn't matter. You're not really applying through the employer. Question number two, can I file AC21 to change employer and the new H1B during this time? Will it impact my EAD AP renewal? It should not impact your EAD AP renewal. If my wife starts job using EAD, can she keep working based upon EAD renewal application? No. You need a valid EAD in hand. If my new job offers 50% more salary than my current job, will it be a problem for AC21? It can be. We have to look at the entire job. How many years ago was your labor certification started? Where was the labor certification started from? If the job was started from Kentucky and your next offer is in New York, of course the salary is going to be higher. Okay? So there are several variables. Audity wants to know, I'm a journalist changing jobs after I-140 and on H-1B extension. Has a U.S. master's degree in journalism and 12 years of experience. EB-3 was filed, I-140 is approved. 6 years on H-1B are gone. New employer wants to hire me. What should they do? Well, you know what they should do is they should apply for your H-1 extension for 3 years. And you should join them only after that extension is approved and then start a new case with them. Palm case, okay? So I don't want you to join them until the H-1 is actually approved. Next question is from GC Wait 007. Can I do an EB-1 while EB-3, EB-2 palms are pending on appeal? Sure, absolutely. Do the PERM denials have any impact on EB-1C, which is international managers or executives processing? And the answer is no. Can we, so there's no impact. You can do that. Can we leave the PERMs without withdrawing them from BALCA? Yes. As my EB-3 PERM appeal can be denied by BALCA anytime, can I file the next extension based upon EB-2 PERM? Yes, if it was filed more than a year ago, definitely. H-1B visa issue wants to know, H-1B transfer after NOIR notice, time frame for current processing is 12 months. Went for an H-1B visa stamping interview. Case got sent back to USCIS for further review. Received intent to revoke in January. Can I transfer my H-1B without recent pay stubs? And the answer is probably yes. I have one comment about this. I'll tell you in a minute. If my current H-1B will be revoked, am I eligible to apply for H-1B transfer or should I apply New Year quota? And that's what I was going to comment about. I am not sure there is a clear answer. If the case gets revoked, are you subject to the quota or not? I think you are subject to the quota. I think that would be the best assumption. Okay. OPT RFE. case as a part of curriculum practical training in my master's program, got an employment offer to a consulting company. So it's a long story. But the bottom line is this. He's got a request for evidence on the OPT. They want to know the employer's address, pay, location, roles and responsibilities, and documentary evidence of pay stubs. So the questions are, do I need supporting documents from the consulting company? Well, if you can't get documents, give them an affidavit describing what the facts of the case are. As my consulting company now says, you have never joined us for employment, how can you expect an employment offer letter? I can provide employment offer letter which was offered. I was not getting paid. Well, you know, on OPT, there is no requirement that you be paid. It can be an internship. It can be an unpaid employment. Okay? So you can provide an affidavit, and if you worked at an end client site, provide a letter from the end client that clearly explains that you were working at that end client site. Further, can I discontinue my work authorization application by not replying? Can I join some other good university to pursue a master's? You might be required to apply for reinstatement, okay? So I think your best bet is to respond with an affidavit explaining the circumstances, especially if you have actually worked during this time, okay? Bear in mind, for OPT to be valid, I think you're allowed, 90 days to be without work, and the amount of work minimum should be 20 hours every week. It doesn't have to be full-time, and remember also that it doesn't have to be paid employment. There's no such law. You may want to go back and talk with the employer. Folks, I'm done with all the questions. Let me just double-check. Yes, all the questions that were posted are done. Anybody who has a follow-up question on the posted questions, press *7 on your phones. *7. Let me double-check that. Press *7. Try *5, you guys. Sorry, I forgot the exact code. Try *5 on your phones. That way I'll know if you have any follow-up questions. Or I can double-check. Yes, *5 is working. Press *5. One question, two questions, three questions, four questions. Okay. Remember, if you press *5 twice, your request gets turned off. That's a toggle. Right now, I have 1, 2, 3, 4 questions. Let me get started in the order that I received your calls, okay? One second. Area code 617, go ahead, please. Area code 617. Go ahead.
Yep. Yep, that's me, Aditi.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, Aditi, the journalist, right?
Yep. The only question I had is my current H-1B visa with this company is valid till 2014.
Right.
Does that change anything you said?
Only one thing, Aditi. One problem with USCIS in these circumstances is sometimes, and they are inconsistent in this,
Sometimes, if
you apply for H-1 extension more than 6 months before the end of your H-1 time, they might give you extension only till 2014 instead of 3 years.
I see.
However, they are not consistent, and if you have paid for the extension, we can certainly hope that they'll give you all 3 years.
Okay. But it would have to be a new one with the new people.
Yeah. It's called a transfer, but a transfer, an amendment, or a new H-1, they are all the same amount of paperwork.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Okay, let me go on to the next question. You logged in at 12:27 p.m. Eastern Time. You're probably using a voice over IP because I don't show a phone number.
Hi, Rajiv. This is regarding EB2 India priority date.
Right.
You said you can't estimate, but it's just a guesstimate. Like last year, dates moved very drastically, but this year everything looks silent, and there are a lot of theories. And as an senior attorney, what is your advice? Like when these dates might move, it's like there are a lot of theories going on.
Well, the theories are actually, it's kind of funny. I have a an article sitting on my desk, drafted by one of my colleagues at my request, about how priority dates actually are calculated and how they move. My problem is I haven't had the time to go over the article, and I'll post it for you guys over the next couple of weeks, I hope. The whole system is very odd. You know, every country, whether they are Vatican City with 300 people or India with 1.2 billion people, get the same number of green cards. So if it's 7,000, it's 7,000 for Vatican and 7,000 for India. That's so unfair, it doesn't make any sense. Okay? So if you recall, there was a big noise a few months ago about doing away with per-country quota system and combining all the visas into one basket. If that comes, that would help. Other than that, the only thing that will really help is if Congress increases the number of green cards or creates categories. I don't see any way there can be a drastic improvement in visa movement.
How about the spillovers? When will they be applied?
The what? I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
Spillover visas when other categories don't use their allocated, right? So when will that happen in this?
There has been some discontent about that. I understand that people have been saying that these visas are being actually despoiled. They are not being used, and they should be used. I really cannot comment because I haven't heard anything from the government that tells us that they are actually doing something constructive towards that. So too much to say to you right now.
But hopefully, from your experience, I have given my date. So when do you think? So it's not accurate, but estimate.
I cannot answer that question. I am sorry.
Okay.
Good luck.
No problem.
Okay, let me go on to the next question. Area code 732, go ahead, please.
Yes, this is an IT analyst regarding the AC21 portability. Basically, if I change employer using AC21, will I be provided decision? Was my AC21 accepted or denied? And when I will come to know?
That's a very good question, and the answer is no. You are not given any decision. You really don't know. In fact, USCIS doesn't even acknowledge receipt of the letter that we sent for AC21. So you will not know if your AC20 has been accepted until your final decision.
Okay, and if it was denied, say, after 2 years, is it possible to switch back to my old employer and continue petition and work with them?
In my opinion, yes. It's a tricky situation, but in my opinion, you can do that.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, and the last question, using AC21, I want to do H1 transfer also. My current H1 is valid for 1.5 years. If I apply for AC21 and H1 transfer, will I get that one pending 1 year or will I get fresh 3 years?
I just explained that to Aditi, but asked me the similar question. See, when you apply for an H1 extension prior to 6 months before expiration of your H1, USCIS is inconsistent. Sometimes they'll give you 3 years, sometimes they'll only give you the remaining 1 year.
Okay.
Okay. But I have, if we insist on it, we've been getting 3 years in our office, but sometimes it does involve some pushing and pulling.
Is there anything I can consult your office to check EC21 is portable or not, like the job duties, salaries, everything?
Absolutely. We can definitely review your two job descriptions and the salary, etc., to make sure that as far as humanly possible. Definitely.
Okay, but I will contact.
Just send an email. You can send me an email directly if you like. My direct email is help@immigration.com. Or you can just use the contact us form on our website to send an email.
Okay.
Okay. Anything else? Sir? Okay. I'll go on to the next one. Area code 201, go ahead, please.
Rajiv, this is Bob. This is not a follow-up question. This is a new question. Is it allowed?
Then I'm going to have to ask you to hold for a minute.
Okay, no problem.
Guys, anybody has any follow-up questions? Okay, I'm going to have to put you on hold for a second.
Sure.
Any follow-up questions? Press 5-star on your phone. Okay, any questions? Oh, there is one. Let's get you first. Or two. Follow-up question. Area code 520, go ahead with your follow-up question, please.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, ma'am.
Yes, actually, it is not a follow-up question. It is a new question as well, so maybe I can go after.
I'm
Bob.
Just taking follow-up questions first.
Sure.
Just wait. I'll get back with you. Area code 773, is it a follow-up
Hi.
Question?
Hi. I'm getting naturalized as a U.S. citizen.
Stop. You have a new question. Stop, please.
Yes.
Just stop. Okay. Area code 347, follow-up or a new question?
This is a new follow-up question, Rajiv.
Okay. Did you say follow-up?
Yes, follow-up. You're right.
Go ahead, please.
I think this is regarding the joint 412 question. My only follow-up question is, do you think where I have got a RFU from my employer B and now my client want to hire me as a permanent? So if I go for a premium processing with my end client X, do you think it will help my situation?
Yes. I think it's a good idea. Well, yes and no. Because, you see, if your original status has expired and you premium process, then they will give you an H-1, but they'll make you go outside U.S.
Yes, I think the situation is right now the original petitioner, that is my employer A, they have not revoked my H-1B, so I believe I still have H-1B from them. And my H-1B from
them. Are you still working for them?
I'm not working for them anymore. I'm working for now employer B, who has filed a transfer petition, and I got RFU on that.
You don't have status through them. So if you
okay.
Premium, chances are you'll end up going outside U.S. for week of 10.
So what is my safest bet in this case, I think, Rajiv?
If by safe you mean, is there a way I don't have to travel outside USA, that is only possible,
yes,
that is only possible if the case in which you got RFE gets approved.
Okay, so that means, we should reply properly to the RFE and get it approved and then move ahead with the client X.
That's what I would do. Yes, sir.
Okay, I think that answers my question. Thank you, Rajiv.
X can file non-premium, and if you win the case, then you can premium it.
Yes, I think right now I think I totally agree with you. We are going with that. I'm working on that RFE from employer B, and we will reply and make it a premium. And in the parallel, and client X is making it a non-premium, and we will go parallelly.
Good. Sounds good. Yep.
Yep. Thank you, Rajiv.
You're welcome. Good luck, sir.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. Let me go on to the next question, which is now I'm open to general questions. You guys can all press 5-star. Remember, if you press 5-star twice, you get taken off. So press 5-star. Area code 520, go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi. Actually, couple of questions. My My qualification is I have done my BCom from India and then MCom from India, and I have more than 20 years of IT experience. And my previous employer had filed my green card in EB3, and I have an approved I-140. My question is, my new employer, I have changed my employer, and they did my H-1 transfer, and my new H-1 is valid up to April 2015. My question is, if my new employer is ready to file my green card in EB2, my question is, if the new EB2 gets denied at I-140 stage, what happens to my previous I-140? I mean, do I lose it, or can I keep getting extensions on the earlier I-140?
Was that with a different employer, ma'am?
Yes, yes. My approved I-140 is with my previous employer, employer A. Now I'm working for employer B, who is ready to sponsor my green card in EB2.
If your EB2 gets denied, your EB3 will not be touched. Okay.
Okay.
However, that EB3 will survive only if you ever want to take back that job. So, in other words, let me rephrase that. Denial of the EB2 by itself does not touch your EB3.
Okay.
Okay. So that's the situation. But you should discuss this in great detail with your lawyers who are doing the EB2. Make sure they give you all the options, because I think it needs a little bit of exploration of what your pros and cons of different actions are. Personally, I think it's not a big deal. If the EB2 case is prepared well, you certainly qualify for EB2. I don't see why not.
And I mean, if at all I go ahead with new EB2, I mean, considering the risk of the denial, what my present employer is saying, that I mean, if we go ahead and file your green card in EB2, and if in case it gets denied, we will file it in EB3 again. But my worry or my concern is the whole thing. I mean, the new I-140 approval should come before my present H-1 expires. That is. In April 2015, or I mean, what if RFE? If I get an RFE or something, and the process gets delayed, what happens in that case? I mean, do I disqualify for getting my H-1 extension, and you know, I need to pack my bags, or how do I go?
This is a pretty long discussion. I may not have enough time, but I can give you quick pointers.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, if by the time you come to extension, your second labor cert has been pending or was filed more than a year ago, you can keep getting H-1 extensions based upon your second labor cert, the EB-2. Okay. If
okay.
The EB-2 gets, I-140 gets denied, you can file an appeal, and while the appeal is pending, you can also keep getting H-1 extensions.
Okay.
And you can also start another EB-3 case.
Is it possible to have two processes in parallel? I mean, can they go ahead and do EB-3 as well as EB-2? Is it possible to do that, or it's not? Is this technically not possible?
Not from the same employer. It's very complicated.
Okay. And how strong would it is the? I mean, according to you, how strong is the case would be for EB2 with the qualification of BCom plus MCom plus around 20 years of IT experience?
I think it's a very good case.
And I mean, I'm sure that, you know, my salary falls in the upper level too, and I'm working as a manager. So do you foresee any kind of, you know, denials, or, you know, a chance of denial even? Because my employer said that these kind of cases might get denied, saying some single source degree is required, which is from foreign country, which they considered as the equivalent.
They are wrong. For EB2, you cannot have a single source degree. EB2 is always 2 degrees.
Okay.
Master's and a bachelor's.
Okay,
so
okay.
They are wrong. EB2 does not require a single source degree. You can combine degrees for EB2 purposes, and 3+2 combo in the same discipline does become equivalent to a U.S. bachelor's degree for EB2 purposes. This is quite clear.
Okay, okay.
All right, good luck.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Area code 777. Did you have a question? 773?
Hi, Rajiv. Yes, I'm getting naturalized as a U.S. citizen. I got my fingerprint done in December 2012. My mother is in the U.S. She has a B2 visa extended through early April of this year on medical reasons. And my father is coming to the U.S. Separately on a B2 visa as well. So I'm thinking of applying for their green card after my citizenship is approved. Now, here's a question. If my citizenship certificate doesn't arrive before my mother's I-94 expires in early April, she'll be out of status. So, you know, is it going to be very troublesome to go through the adjustment of status to apply for her green card?
No.
Okay.
Not only will your mother be out of status, she would be unlawfully present. If somebody is unlawfully present in U.S., say, for 180 days, they can be barred from entering U.S. for 3 years, if unlawful for 1 year, barred for 10 years. But if they do not travel outside USA until they get their green card, even if you are out of status and unlawfully present for 10 years, if you are the parent of a U.S. citizen, you are forgiven.
Mm-hmm. And is it, does USCIS commonly assume preconceived intent because her B2 status...
That has always worried me, because preconceived intention can be used as a ground for denying 485. And if that is denied, of course, during the time the 485 is pending, you are not accruing unlawful presence. So as long as you get the 485 filed before 180 days of their I-94 expiration, we are okay, even if the 485 is denied. She obviously doesn't have preconceived intention because she's been here so long, okay? But your dad could be said to have preconceived intention because he's entering and you're thinking of applying for a green card for him. As long as you're still thinking and you haven't done it, I think we are okay. If after a few months you change your mind and you decide to file for him as well, I think you should be okay from the preconceived intention point also.
Mm-hmm. Well, I haven't told any of them. In fact, they're not interested in immigrating.
I think,
so,
Mom, you can easily do. I don't see any problem with it.
Mm-hmm. Now, for Dad, what's the key to convince USCIS that he didn't have preconceived intention?
Well,
because
there really is no key other than this. This may not be in the same context, but the general guidelines are the same. If somebody applies for a change of status after entry, within 30 days of entry, this is preconceived intention. If they do it between 30 and 60 days, they can ask for an explanation. After 60 days, they don't raise that issue.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Now, just one quick follow-up. So my own income is not sufficient for the I-864, but my joint tax return with my husband is sufficient. Does he
enough.
Need to sign?
Yeah, that's good enough. He probably will have to sign the 864, I think. I haven't looked into this issue specifically. You know what you can do? This is easily done. Just file your own I-864. USCIS will not deny this case. They will just ask you for a supplemental 864.
Mm-hmm. Great. And how is asset calculated in meeting the I-864?
Oh, that's a long discussion. You have to just follow the worksheet that they give with the 864.
Okay. Okay, great. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thank you.
Okay.
Rajiv, this is
I
Bob.
Have three more questions. Just sit tight. One more guy before you, sir. One more guy.
Bob?
Area code 502. Go ahead, please. Okay. Area code 201, sir. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Rajiv?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah. Basically, this is the situation. Right now, I have... I'm the sixth year of my H-1. Basically,
okay.
My green card has been filed after my fifth year.
Okay.
And my labor just got approved a week before. And my current H-1 is valid for until March 13th or so. So I have like 7 months of my, whatever the recapture time.
Okay.
So right now, how does it work? Like, can I apply for the premium 140 right now and ask for 3 years extension, or I just need to first apply only the extension?
3 year extension is not available until the I-140 is actually approved.
Oh, okay.
So you can try apply for I-140 premium, see if it gets approved. before March, and then you can apply for a 3-year extension. Otherwise, just apply for 1 year and 7 months.
No, but 1 year is not applicable because my green card was filed after the 5th year.
Oh, okay, okay, okay. So you are not yet into the 1 year anniversary of the labor cert.
Right.
When was your labor cert filed?
Labor filed October 15th.
Okay. No, I think the only thing you can do is file for H-1 premium process, for I-140 premium process.
And even I cannot apply for the 7-month extension for whatever the time period I have?
That you are entitled to, no question about that.
Okay, and after the 7 months, if 140 is approved, then I can apply for 3 years, right?
Exactly.
Irrespective of my one, whether I filed after the 5th year, still it doesn't applicable, right?
No problem at all, yes. Because
yeah,
3-year extension is based upon I-140 approval, regardless of when the labor cert was filed.
I see. Okay, that's what I was concerned. Okay. So as long as my 140 is approved, then after 7 months, I can apply for 3 years extension. So that is definitely valid, right?
That is correct. 7 months you can get any time you want.
Oh, okay. So right now the only option I have is I just have to apply for the whatever the recapture time is 7 months and just apply my premium 140 and wait for my premium 140 approval and then I can go for 3 years after the 7 months.
Correct. And in between, if it doesn't come through, you can just get the 7 months as well.
Right, right. Okay. And then another question if you have time, like for my friend.
Oh, go ahead.
He's in India right now. And he already has a valid H-1, I mean, from previous employer, but he's in India. Can he do the H-1 transfer from India?
Yes. Yes.
But he has to go for stamping for the new employer, right, once he gets the stamp.
That's what they want. See, if somebody is in USA already and they change employers, they can use the same visa. But if you're outside USA and you change employers, consulates have indicated they want us to come back for a visa stamp.
I see. So, but he doesn't have, he doesn't have an I-94 for the transfer. So, how does it work for the transfer?
The transfer is relevant only to the extent that he's not subject to the quota. Otherwise, it's not a problem. So, it's really, even if he's outside USA, as long as he got an H-1 approval, he's not subject to the quota. That's all we care about. You can call it transfer. You can call it new H-1. Nobody cares.
I see. Okay.
Problem
Thanks,
is
Roger.
That we have to consider the quota. That's all.
Right, right. Okay.
Okay, good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Were you area code 502 or 201?
201.
Thank you. Okay, the last call I have here is area code 703. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajiv. This is Sanjay here. Thanks in advance for this setting up this call for all of us.
Sure, my pleasure.
Two questions I have. My EB3 140 I-485 was submitted back in 2007 along with a lot of people waiting since then. But recently also got EB2 with new employer for 140 approved. And we did interfile on 1st of October last year. So that is about 3 months back. So I have two questions with respect to this situation. One is that the last time I gave fingerprints was with EB3 485 in 2009. So this time, at the time of 485 approval or before approval, will I have to give fingerprints again? That is question one. And question two is, some of the colleagues, and this is informal advice from colleagues, they are saying, okay, your interfile request 485 is pending for 3-4 months. Don't go to congressman, however, or senator, because it might be considered as escalation by the reviewing officer. You should just wait and don't go to congressman, ombudsman office. It's escalation. So what's your view on the second one? Is it really considered as escalation? And the first one was about fingerprinting.
I am not sure about the fingerprinting because it's up to the government. The fact that one is EB2, the other one is EB3 is not really relevant. The same fingerprints are good. I don't think you should have to fingerprint again as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
And in my view, this is not escalation. I absolutely disagree.
Okay.
Thanks.
Sure. Yeah, thank you, Roger.
Oh, you're welcome. Good luck.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Okay, let's see. Area code 520, go ahead, please. Area code 520. area code 520. Did you have a question?
Yes, hi. Actually, I have another follow-up question. Is in the sense that my present employer is saying that it is going to take some time for filing my green card in EB2, and in the meanwhile, I need to visit India. So I have my H1, which is approved till April 2015. So if I go and visit my family back in India, I need to get my H1 stamped again. So will I face any kind of issue, and what am I supposed to tell there? I mean, is my green card filed, or what do I say in that H1's question?
Filing of a green card has absolutely no impact on H1.
Okay.
But these days, getting an H1 stamping is extremely difficult.
Okay.
Consulates are trying to find excuses to deny cases, and they deny cases on flimsiest, absolute nonsensical reasons. Okay.
Okay.
So if you can avoid it, avoid it. If you can't avoid it, please discuss your case with your H1 lawyers. I think you should think of getting H1 stamping in Canada rather than going it from India only.
Okay. 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 Would it have any impact on my approved I-140? No, right? I mean, even if it is.
No, it should not.
Okay. Okay.
Good luck.
Okay. Okay. Thanks, Rajiv.
All right, folks, last time, anybody has any questions, press 5-star. Anybody has any questions before we hang up? One more question. Okay. Area code 212, go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajiv. My name is Fanil. I had a question. My parents-in-law were denied a visitor's visa about a year and a half ago. And the only reason they were provided was due to the new rules, we cannot grant you any visa at this time. The question is there any way to know what are those new rules?
I have no idea what they mean by no rules. There were no new rules in the last year and a half.
Oh, okay. And is there if they want to apply for again, is there any precautions that we can take to hash out some questions or something like that, this kind of a question?
I don't think you can pre-prepare for this. They just have to go in and see what happens.
Oh, okay.
Okay, because there are no rules. I don't know what they're talking about.
All right. But is there any way, they give some paper after the visa is denied. From that paper or anything, is there any possible way to find out what were their reasons of rejection? Or
we can take a look at that piece of paper and see what this is.
Oh, okay. All right, thank you very much.
Well, good luck.
Thank you.
Okay, folks, once again, 5-star if anybody has any questions left over. Okay, very good. Thank you all for being here. I will talk with you again in a couple of weeks, and we'll go over your questions. Thank you.